Florida keeps growing, and Florida's influence on national politics keeps growing, too. But could it have been more? This is the Florida Roundup from WLRN Public Media in Miami and WJCT Public Media in Jacksonville. I'm Tom Hudson. My co-host Melissa Ross is off this week. There will be one more seat in the U.S. House of Representatives for Florida next year. Florida's population grew 15% in the past decade, according to the census, adding one more congressional district and one more electoral college vote. But Florida may have missed out on gaining a second seat. Also, state lawmakers finish up their regular law-writing session. The politics and policies like anti-rioting, police training reforms, transgender student-athletes going after big tech, and how you cast your vote. It's all ahead with your input, 305-995-1800. Welcome to the Florida Roundup here on Florida Public Radio. Thanks for listening and supporting public media. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami. My co-host Melissa Ross in Jacksonville is off this week. Does Florida feel a little more crowded? Well, it's because it is. More people may mean more traffic, mean more neighbors, also means a higher profile for Floridians on the national political stage. The U.S. Census Bureau announced the initial results of the nationwide 2020 population count this week. The results show Florida's population grew by almost 15% from 2010, and that means Florida will gain one new seat in the U.S. House of Representatives in Washington, D.C. It also means one more electoral college vote for president in Florida's winner-take-all vote every 4 years for president. A new congressional district will be carved out somewhere in Florida before the 2022 election. Where and how those lines are drawn could determine the dominant political color of the state's delegation in Washington, D.C. So let's start here this week. How will the new seat be carved out? How will it mean more clout for Florida? Did politics over the census cost Florida maybe a second congressional seat? Did you fill out the census form? Did you skip it? Let us know. Raise your hand if you're one of those adding to the 15% population increase over the past decade. Here's how. 305-995-1800. Statewide phone number open now, live on this Friday. 305-995-1800. You can also hit us up on Twitter. We are at Florida Roundup. Mike Snyder is with us. He is a reporter with the Associated Press in Orlando and has been following the census for a good long time. Mike, welcome back to the program. Nice to have you.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So let's talk, first of all, about the process that kind of has led to the count that we saw this week. Was this process disrupted at all, impacted at all by the pandemic in the last year?
Absolutely. The pandemic had such an impact on the nation's headcount. It started, first of all, the pandemic started right around the same time that the 2020 census took off for most of the country, back in March 2020. That's when people were getting questionnaires in their mailboxes, reminding them that they could fill out the form either online or send it back via mail. Then just a couple weeks into the start of the headcount, the Census Bureau suspended its field operations because of the pandemic, and it pushed back all sorts of schedules. It pushed back when census takers would start knocking on doors. It pushed back the deadline for finishing the headcount, and it pushed back how long it would take for the Census Bureau to crunch the numbers. And the first of those numbers were the ones that were released this week.
Right. And those numbers showed this 15% increase in Florida's population. It is a deacceleration in the decade over decade growth in Florida, isn't it?
Right. But it's true for the nation as a whole. This past decade saw the slowest growth for the nation since the Great Depression. There are a whole lot of reasons for that. First of all, you have a slowdown in immigration. And then you also have kind of like the fallout from the Great Recession, which to some degree kept or delayed young people from moving out of their parents' homes, forming households, getting married, and having babies, and doing all these other markers of adulthood. So that's true for Florida.
One of the other, I suppose, noteworthy aspects of the results from this Census Bureau as it relates to Florida compared to previous decades' results is that it did not add two new congressional seats in Florida. Sunshine State had been seeing this decade-over-decade increase of two additional seats for many decades, but not this time around.
Right. It was a surprise. Florida had been predicted to gain two seats, and a lot of that prediction were based on these estimates that the Census Bureau puts out every year. And estimates are different than the actual census count, in that the estimates are just a survey that measures a portion of the population, and they extrapolate that, whereas the census is an actual count of every single person. And so there was a discrepancy between the estimate and the actual head count. And so that has a lot of people scratching their heads on what happened. And Florida is not alone in this respect. Texas underperformed, and Arizona underperformed. Texas was expected to gain three seats. They only gained two seats. And Arizona was expected to gain another seat, and it did not gain a seat.
Yeah. We're going to dig into that a little bit more in some of the potential explanations about why. Mike Snyder is with us, writes about the census for the Associated Press. He is based in Orlando, Florida. If you're one of those 15% of population increase that added to Florida's population, raise your hand. Let's hear from you. Or how have you seen your neighborhood get more crowded in the last decade? 305-995-1800. What are the implications for politics? 305-995-1800 or at Florida Roundup. Bear Harbor Island in South Florida. Kareem is up first. Kareem, thanks for calling. You're on the radio.
Hey, thank you. Thank you very much for taking my call. Just to go in line with just a comment and perhaps question. We moved with my family. I moved my company from the Boston area over 10 years ago. We enjoyed the tremendous quality of life, weather and everything. But since COVID, I noticed quite an important influx on migration. Obviously, for COVID, there was a reason, and maybe economically also. So we are seeing that influx resulting in more crowded roads, less safety on the roads, actually. And it begs the question, are we ready? Is South Florida ready for this influx? And as much as we're excited about having more representation, hopefully that's going to make a difference. We do have some concerns going forward, and I will take my myself off the air.
Kareem, you bring up two really important points, and Mike Snyder with the Associated Press, if you could address them here. I'm going to take the first one, that he's seen an influx in his neighborhood in South Florida since the pandemic. How dynamic is this census count? In other words, you know, we've heard anecdotally stories of folks from the Northeast, particularly, or California, moving to Florida during the pandemic. If those folks moved in March, April, May, June, are they counted as Floridians in this count?
As long as they are counted where they were on April 1st. So if they were living in Florida on April 1st, 2020, then they were counted as Florida residents.
Gotcha. And his second point about, you know, beyond the political implications, what about the civil and community implications? Is Florida ready for this? Florida is a state, Mike, as you know, that has been built for better than a century on steady population growth, and the implications that population growth has, as we're now 21, 22 million people plus, on natural resources, on road infrastructure, on sewer infrastructure. It's a long list of places where the pressure of this population really kind of meets, isn't it?
Absolutely, and especially where he is in South Florida, you know, where you're talking about, you know, issues of, you know, beach erosion and flooding you know, water availability. And where I am in Central Florida, you know, that's maybe to a lesser degree, but that's still an issue, especially when it comes to, you know, the water and our aquifer and all that, and whether we can support the population that's been moving down here.
Yeah, definitely. Pompano Beach, Margaret, you're up next. Thanks for calling the Florida Roundup. You're on the radio.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. Thanks for calling. Your thoughts?
Importantly, just like you were mentioning, the resources will definitely be increasing because if we were able to make ourselves count, more schools will get funding, teachers will have better salaries, and everything that you see in infrastructure, roads, transportation, health services, social services, are able to get funds. If those that didn't get, you know, get counted, that's actually affecting your own community. So people need to understand that if you were able to get counted, that's the only way each state is able to grow and kind of go even with population and the resources that we received. And implications, I think implications were more likely politically in the arena of extending the dates. COVID-19 came about, people were afraid to go out and or opening the doors for census takers. Mm-hmm. So I think right now, the more representation we have, the better. Because we all need to understand that that's how we're able to get more attention from the government.
Margaret, appreciate those thoughts from Pompano Beach. Mike Snyder, she makes a great point, which is something we heard from census advocates all winter and spring long, which is removing the politics and the political implications from the census. There are a lot of dollars, particularly federal dollars, grant dollars, that are attached to the results of these census figures.
Exactly. And that message is usually the most successful. The Census Bureau tests different messaging on what is most successful. And they did find out, rather than saying, hey, your state will get more political power, the message that resonates the most with trying to get people to fill out the census questionnaire is saying, this affects your community. This determines how many schools, you know, will be in your community, where hospitals will be built. This will affect the roads you drive on commuting to work. And so really driving home the personal nature of why it's important and how it affects you was really the most effective messaging in trying to get people to participate.
Margaret alluded to the engagement with census takers by some households. She was talking about the pandemic and maybe concerns about opening your door to a stranger in February, March, and April. But there were a lot of political overtones to the census from the Trump administration as the census was getting going. There was questioning about whether or not to include a citizen question, for instance. And there was some rhetoric that was undermining the confidence in the results of the census from the Trump administration. Did that have an impact? What are the demographers saying about the potential tale of that kind of language?
Yes. I mean, to some degree, there is now, because we just have state level data, and we really won't know the impact of, the citizenship question, the failed effort to add a citizenship question, until we get small data in smaller geographies, which is.
Hey, it's Fernand.
Yeah, Mike, you're dropping out just a little bit there on our Zoom connection. We'll reestablish that and make sure that's solid. Mike Snyder with the Associated Press, who has been covering the Census Bureau and the census for a good long time. You can let us know your thoughts, 305-995-1800, 305-995-1800, or at Florida Roundup on Twitter. Paula sent us this tweet, saying that, heck yeah, I filled out the census. I was an enumerator in 1990. I suppose some of these people moving to Florida have come from California because nobody can afford to live there anymore. What political color will Florida end up being? Great question. What color will Florida end up being? Nationally, it is known as a purple state, but internally, certainly it is a red state when you look at our legislature. Let's take a look at, or a listen rather, to Lee in Winter Haven on line 5. Lee, thanks for calling. You're on the radio.
Yes, sir. I wanted to echo some of the former speakers to the radio today. I think a lot of people were intimidated by our former President Trump. I know in the past, former President Trump had called Mexicans rapists, and he had said very bad things about many immigrants in general. And I know here in Florida, we do have people who come to work, and I think a lot of them were afraid to open their doors. I think a lot of them were afraid of the rhetoric that our president was setting on fire here in Florida against people of color. And I think it really did affect our census, sir.
Lee, I appreciate those thoughts. Mike Snyder with the Associated Press back with us. I think we got a little bit stronger of a connection, Mike. But continue to tell us a little bit more about kind of what the population scientists are conjecturing about the rhetoric around the census this time around.
No, there's some very big concern over the impact that have. And if you look at the three states that underperformed, Florida, Arizona, Texas, they all have substantial Latino populations. And in fact, about in each of those states, about half of the population growth over the decade was Latino population. But yeah, a lot of experts are very concerned that that had a dampening effect on participation in the census because people were afraid to, either talk to a census taker or fill out the questionnaire or be identified somehow because of, the rhetoric that was coming from the Trump administration. However, it's still too early to determine, scientifically whether that had an impact, just because we really won't know that until we get other data sets at smaller geographies like neighborhood blocks or counties that more nuanced picture of what happened during the count.
Mike, let me ask you about the next steps, particularly as it relates to this new congressional district that Florida has earned because of the population growth. What's the process and any early word on where that new district may be carved out?
Yeah, I mean, I think the expectation is it will be somewhere either in South or Central Florida. The district is carved out during a process called redistricting, which is when the lawmakers carve up a new map.
The state lawmakers have to make these decisions, right?
Right. In Florida, state lawmakers. So, yeah. So that's what will happen, and it usually ends up being a very partisan battle that usually ends up in court.
And ends up on the ballot for 2022, right?
Right. Well, right. You know, it depends on whose ox is gored as far as, as they fight over, who gets to claim which district. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And then what about just the shifting landscape of the Electoral College? Florida has consistently grown in its importance in that process. It has moved in the winners category and the losers category. We'll put that aside for a moment. But just the influence that Florida is going to have on the 2024 election and going forward for the rest of this decade. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Sure. I mean, Florida added another electoral college vote, so that even adds to Florida's standing as the largest swing state, even though, over the past two presidential elections, it seems to have been trending a little more red. But Florida will once again come the next presidential election, be this state that everyone comes courting. So that just adds the past week's data release just adds to that.
And we continue to see southern states, Texas and Florida particularly, but other Sun Belt states continue to increase the influence as the more traditional industrial northeastern states, New York, Illinois, and others, have been losing electoral college votes in this process.
Right. I mean, you had North Carolina pick up a seat. But then it's been an expansion that's been kind of southern and westward. Yeah. And you also had, western states such as Oregon and Colorado that picked up seats too.
Mike Snyder, watching the numbers at the Census Bureau for the Associated Press, joining us from Orlando. Mike, thanks for sharing your reporting with us.
All right, thank you.
We got lots more to come, talking about politics and policies here on this final day of the regular legislative session in Florida. That's next. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup here on Florida Public Radio. Thanks again for listening. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami. My co-host Melissa Ross is off this week. Ballot drop-off boxes will still be allowed. Voters will not have to show an ID if they put their vote-by-mail ballot in a drop box. These two restrictions were dropped from controversial voting bill that is now on its way to Governor Ron DeSantis' desk for his signature. But there is still plenty of heat over this legislation. Republican leaders in Tallahassee had proposed much more restrictive rules in a voting bill just a few weeks ago. It's one of the many proposals coming out of the GOP-controlled legislature in the last weeks of this law writing session. Today, Friday, is the official end. There's the anti-rioting bill, a crackdown on social media giants, banning transgender student athletes, and a bipartisan bill on police training. Politics and policies now here on the Florida Roundup. The voting bill, law enforcement, big tech. Let us know what you think and how the politics of the state turn into policies for voters and residents out of the state capitol. 305-995-1800. 305-995-1800. You can also hit us up on Twitter at Florida Roundup. Susan McManus is a University of South Florida Distinguished University Professor Emerita and Political Analyst. Professor McManus, welcome back to the Florida Roundup. Thanks for your time today.
Well, thank you for having me. What a week and what a year.
Well, the hanky hasn't dropped yet in Tallahassee as we're talking here on this Friday afternoon. So just you wait, right? I want you to set the stage for us, though, because this legislative session here in Florida came after the defeat of Donald Trump. Republican gains in Congress, Republican gains in Tallahassee, and amid a pandemic. So how would you describe the political environment for this legislative session?
Unusual in that there was just not much in-person kind of activity. Tallahassee was kind of Deadsville if you had a chance to go up there in the middle of this session. But the issues were really incredibly controversial and huge. And it was really interesting because we started the session with the fear that there was going to be a real shortfall of funds. And all of a sudden, this huge amount of federal funding came in and we were able to do a lot more than had anticipated. But obviously, the politics in Tallahassee are very partisan in nature. There were just a few bills that were passed unanimously, but one of them was the police reform bill. Mm-hmm. But nonetheless, almost every one of these controversial bills that you just mentioned fell along party lines in the voting. And if anyone thinks that Florida is not still heavily divided from a partisan perspective, all you had to do is look at the votes in the session this time out. A couple other things I noticed. It looked like there was less tension, at least to an outside observer, between the president of the Senate, Simpson, and the House Speaker, Sprouls. It also was very apparent that going into the session, the governor had made it very clear what he wanted in certain terms, a lot more than many previous governors had done going into a session.
Yeah, I want to ask you about that. Governor DeSantis had two stated top priorities, the way he described it back before the session began. This, I think, came out in January and February. One was the crackdown on big tech, he called it, on big social media companies, Facebook, Twitter, Google, through YouTube, even Amazon. And then the new anti-rioting crimes. That legislation was inspired by the demonstrations and protests after the killing of George Floyd in Minneapolis last May. And the governor got both. He got both of those. He got the anti-rioting legislation, Professor McManus, a week ago, and the big tech crackdown came in the final few days here. So the governor seems to have been able to fulfill these big priorities that he stated, right?
Well, there's a very big, very, very big reason why is that Republicans dominate the seats in each chamber, which is exactly why the Florida Democratic Party is frantically trying to fix their turnout problems that they had in the 2020 election. and to try and start winning some of these legislative seats that they you know, demographically and registration wise should have won. And I think that, you know, when you dominate, your party wins so many seats and the other party isn't able to compete. What we did see, however, was that there was some very important impact on the part of Florida Democrats in each chamber. And you can see it in some of the bills, some of the adjustments that were made, but more in the election bill than the ones we just mentioned.
Yeah, the voting bill. Well, let's bring in a Democratic strategist into the conversation. Fernand Amandi is with us. Ben Dixon and Amandi polling, Democratic strategist, MSNBC analyst. And Fernand, welcome back to the program. Been a good long time, but I appreciate your time today.
It's a pleasure to be here with you, Tom, and with Professor McManus.
Yeah. How do you respond to Professor McManus's observation there about the Florida Democratic Party and kind of its influence or lack thereof in this legislative session?
You know, I wish I could say she was wrong and engaging in hyperbolic commentary, but unfortunately, as a Democrat, I have to acknowledge the facts, and the truth is that she's right on the money. And we've seen this. This is the culmination effect of really 20 plus years of ineptitude when it comes to the ability of Florida Democrats to actually do what their only mission is, and that is to win elections in the state and put office holders in place to act as a counterweight to these overreaches by this Republican-controlled legislature. A Republican-controlled legislature, I would add, that has been in control of every aspect of Florida government for now more than 20 years. Mm-hmm. And I think, Tom, one of the ways of looking at this, you know, you think back to Harry Truman's famous commentary about the do-nothing Congress. Well, you hear the breakdown that you and Professor McManus just laid out, and the only takeaway that is that this is not a do-nothing legislature. They're actually accomplishing things. It's a bad-faith legislature, because many of these initiatives, the priorities that Governor DeSantis has name-checked as the most important that he's now gotten passed, were by no means what the people of Florida and the residents of Florida said were the issues that most plagued the state. This is tied in beyond partisanship. This is further evidence of what we now see as today's modern post-Trump Republican Party further and further abandoning the tenets around American democracy and the rule of law that protect the rights of citizens to engage in a responsible civic approach to life. And we see that happening over and over again. Sadly, I think this legislation is designed to counter those initiatives that are the American traditions of the last 246 years.
Ferdinand, I want to ask more about the voting legislation. I should note that we contacted a half a dozen Republican strategists in Florida over the past 2 days, inviting them on this program. They could not make it because of scheduling conflicts, and we will invite them on future Florida Roundup programs. 305-995-1800 is the phone number to join the conversation. Policies and politics here in this final law writing day in Florida. 305-995-1800. Let's go to Rick on line three. Rick, go ahead. You're on the radio.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. Thanks for calling.
Thanks for taking the call. Hey, was it Fernando that was just talking?
Fernand. Yeah, Fernand.
Okay. He said exactly what I wanted to say. The Democrats really need to start pushing this. I mean, it's been over 20 years since we've had some Democratic representation, and Republicans just keep passing all of these ridiculous laws that nobody really is interested in, except the Republicans. I mean, you know, got to do, the Anti-Riot Act and voter registration. Stop it, please.
Rick, how do you square? I hear you, Rick. I understand, and I appreciate you adding your voice. But how do you square what you deem unpopular, unnecessary legislation to the Republican majority in Florida that has lasted for 20 some odd years, that voters, including in your area along the Atlantic coast, keep, you know, are sending those representatives back to in support of this type of legislation?
Yeah, and that's what puzzles me. I mean, DeSantis used to be our, you know, representative here for this district, you know, and he ends up in the governorship. And I mean, my wife and I have been fighting you know, that for years, but, you know, I don't understand why, you know, we keep getting Republicans elected time and time and time again.
Rick, I appreciate you adding your voice there from the coast. Rick joining us here on the Florida Roundup, 305-995-1800. Susan McManus, University of South Florida, Professor Emerita, Political Analyst, Fernanda Mondi with Ben Dixon Amandi, MSNBC, Democratic Analyst and Strategist with us. Your phone calls, again, 305-995-1800. Susan, what do you hear there from Rick? And what does... What do the polls tell us statewide or in the districts that that these types of policies and how they play out ultimately at the ballot box?
Well, I think there's a bigger picture here that must be understood by frustrated Democrats, and that is that the two parties are almost equal in terms of registration. And they have been, that's Democrats have actually dominated registration. It got tighter in 2020, but they're equal. But almost 28 or 29% of people registering is no party affiliation. So let's talk about the demographics. Democrats aim their party platform and their outreach to younger voters, which makes sense. Now, the three youngest generations in our state make up 55% of Florida's registered voters. The Biden campaign, for example, really targeted that group and failed miserably because they don't message properly with younger voters, and they also don't utilize the means of communication in reaching younger voters. But if you look at what's happening, there's generational replacement. The older generations in Florida are passing on to glory, but the younger ones are rising that are even among the NPAs lean more liberal and more Democratic. It's just that they are not drawn to party approaches. They prefer candidates. They don't focus on party, but candidates who are, number one, inspirational, number two, talk to their issues in a non-condescending manner, and three, are diverse. And if you look at the elections over the last four or five cycles, the candidates that have done best and come closest, and in several cases, won Florida statewide, Democrats, have been candidates of color. Obama twice, and if you look at Gillum, he went to a runoff. I mean, it was that tight.
Andrew Gillum, so the former Tallahassee mayor who ran for governor.
The problem is their outreach to a key demographic just isn't in sync with the realities of these younger generations.
Susan McManus, stick with us, a political analyst, a political science professor, University of South Florida. Fernanda Mondi still with us, MSNBC analyst and Democratic strategist. Your phone calls still to come, 305-995-1800. We're talking about policies and politics in Florida, how the two intersect and combine in big ways on this final day of the regular legislative session here in Florida, 305-995-1800. Again, on Twitter, at Florida Roundup is our handle there. You are listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. Fernand, as a Democratic strategist, Professor McManus's analysis in terms of the data certainly is spot on. We are a state that is split three ways, a third Republican registered, about a third Democratic registered, and about a third and the fastest growing, the NPAs. How about her analysis there of less issue and more person-oriented attraction when it comes to Florida voters?
You know, I'm not sure I share the professor's views on this particular point. And the reason is we have seen a tendency by Florida voters on issues precisely, some of the constitutional amendments, which are very much what you might call Democratic issues, whether it's raising the minimum wage, whether it's restoring felons' voter rights, whether it's the constitutional amendments over the years on class size, on the redistricting policies, those get overwhelming support, which suggests to me that on the issues, the voters are aligned with where Democratic priorities are. Where the rubber, however, does not seem to meet the road comes with Democratic branded candidates. And I think it has to do with the Democratic brand in Florida, for better or for worse, is not as well regarded. And until the Democrats begin the effort of rebranding and understanding what drives what some may regard either as a toxic brand or as a brand that there's a difficulty with. They need to change that dimension, and that's what's going to help them, I believe, start winning statewide elections again. Do candidates matter? Of course they do, and it's always better if you have a dynamic, inspirational candidate. But what we found is even when those candidates are on the ballot, a lot of times, unless the Democratic Party does a better job of messaging around those issues and making the case how a Democratic office holder can improve the quality of life of a Floridian, those are where I think you're going to get better efforts and better results at the ballot box.
Let's go to Mary Ann calling in line 6 in Miami. Go ahead, Mary Ann. You're on the radio.
Hi. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here, a little too excited. But I agree with both individuals who just spoke. I'm sorry, I don't know their names. And I'm glad he touched on, like, what when Democratic leaders finally, like, I feel like it's in a simple way, basically put their money where their mouth is, not just not referencing money, but actually showing results, proving results. I was once on the tip of going towards the Republican side before Trump was elected. Totally pushed me back over. So I mean, I understand the Democratic, as speaking from the people, I'm from Miami, I understand the frustration with the Democratic Party. But clearly the Republican Party is not the answer. So I really do hope that the Democrats can figure this out. I'm part of a few Democratic committees around here, like just locally as a member, not doing much. Because I'm a mom, so I'm a little busy, but I really hope as an immigrant, the Democrats can turn this around for us, because it feels unsafe. It feels, you know, not a good time to be in Miami for many people.
What do you mean feels unsafe, Marianne?
Well, as far as immigration is concerned, as far as police brutality, you know, I don't think our concerns are being heard in where it matters, where it can actually affect the lives. With this anti-riot bill now, I mean, Black Lives Matter protesters are in danger. Illegal or anti-border control or CPB, like for fair immigration rights, those kind of protests aren't safe. And it's just one example of many things that the Republican Party is doing to harm us, the people.
Marianne, thanks for taking time out of your busy schedule to join us here. Some important points there to hear from Marianne in Miami. We want to hear your points. Republican, Democrat, NPA, doesn't matter. Phone number is the same for everybody here on the Florida Roundup, and all voices are welcome in our civil forum. 305-995-1800. We'd love to hear conservative voters, Republican voters, Democrat, progressive, NPAs, no party affiliate. Same number, 305-995-1800. Florida Roundup here on Florida Public Radio. Thanks again for listening. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami. My co-host Melissa Ross in Jacksonville is off this week. Florida lawmakers wrap up their regular law writing session today on this Friday. Several of the governor's legislative priorities have been or are on their way to his desk for his signature. New vote by mail and ballot drop restrictions are coming. Crackdown on big social media platforms banning so-called vaccine passports. 305-995-1800, talking about the intersection of policies from the legislature and politics in Florida. 305-995-1800 on the telephone. Republican, Democrat, or NPA, doesn't matter. Same phone number, same Twitter handle for everybody as well, at Florida Roundup there on Twitter. We contacted a half dozen Republican strategists in Florida, invited them on to the program. They could not make it because of scheduling conflicts, and we will invite them on to future programs. Fernanda Mondi is still with us. Ben Dixon and Amandi, Democratic strategist, MSNBC analyst, and Susan McManus, University of South Florida, distinguished university professor emerita and political analyst, still with us. Susan, the last caller we heard from there, Marianne of Miami, spoke about the anti-rioting bill. And I want to ask you about this anti-rioting bill, one of the governor's stated priorities for this legislative session. It passed early. It passed last week, and the governor signed it with a flourish. How, as a political scientist, how will this law be used politically, do you think, as candidates line up for the 2022 election cycle?
Certainly, as a get-out-the-vote mechanism for getting his base out, because if you look at the voting patterns in the 2020 election, safety and concerns about riots were what in the end sort of drew back some women who were leaning more towards Biden back to their Republican home. And so the more that you see tumultuous activities across the country, particularly when it comes to burning down people's homes and stores and things like that, the more that this bill stays alive or as a mechanism for attracting Republican voters. So it's clearly, you'll see it, and you'll see it on the other side. Democrats will vehemently use it in getting out their base because they see it as a violation of freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, and so forth. I think everyone agrees, and I'd be interested in what Professor Amani says, but I think that everyone agrees that there'll be lawsuits over this statute before it's over.
In all likelihood, yes, probably true. In fact, there's already been one lawsuit, at least one lawsuit filed preemptively in the days, I think about 48 hours after the governor signed it. Fernand, your thoughts as a Democratic strategist, Susan spoke about how it can be and likely will be used by Republicans in the 2022 cycle. You know, part of this legislation also includes kind of more the potential of more state oversight when it comes to law enforcement, local police funding as a result of the so-called defund the police rhetoric that we heard last May and June. How could Florida Democrats be using this anti-rioting legislation, HB1, during the upcoming election cycle?
Tom, I'm a little leery of casting this particular issue in partisan terms because I think it's such an egregious assault on Americans of all political registrations, constitutional rights, that to cast this as well, a Republican versus that issue or an anti-rioting measure, I think dilutes and diminishes the very authoritarian and frightening chilling effect that this bill would have. And if we can, let's just quickly review. This was done allegedly in response to the Black Lives Matter protest that took place over the summer. Well, here in Florida, there were no incidents of what you would call sustained violence or even violent outbursts in general. By and large, the protests were conducted overwhelmingly to the 95 percentile or more in peaceful demonstrations, citizens exercising their constitutional rights. And the idea that Governor DeSantis and the Republicans would suggest that this merited a problem when if their interest was safety and security, why not address other measures where we see gun violence and others that are costing Floridians their lives? That's what speaks to the bad faith and authoritarian nature of this legislative initiative.
Now, there was property damage to police cars. There was property damage to private businesses. We saw that in Miami. We saw a number of arrests, Fernand. So that 95% or whereabouts of peaceful protests perhaps may be somewhat true, but the supporters of this anti-rioting legislation will say that 5% is a problem. And that's what this legislation goes after.
But Tom, there are laws in place for breaking the law. In other words, those people that committed those acts during the mostly peaceful protests were prosecuted and tried as they should be. This adds an additional layer of anti-American restrictions on the right to exercise your constitutional right to peacefully protest. And the idea that we're going to do this now on steroids as if there weren't measures already in place before is, I believe, disingenuous, and that's where I think the Republicans and this Republican-led legislature are acting in an un-American posture as opposed to in a good-faith posture to crank down on violence, which, of course, and property damage, which, of course, should be litigated through law.
Let's go to Daniela in Sarasota, who is joining our conversation. Go ahead, Daniela.
Hi. Thanks for having me. Mm-hmm. So my concern, I'm a Democrat. My whole family is NPA. But they all lean liberal. But our biggest concern where we see Democrats losing vote is anti-gun laws. And so, as the previous speaker just said, there are already laws in place to help litigate violence, property damage, and, you know, we should crack down on gun crime, which is true. But the Democrats are losing a lot of voters, NPA, and even people who lean liberal when they say they want to have low-capacity magazines or ban, quote-unquote, assault rifles, when there are laws in place in order to keep to have background checks and everything. But it's interesting because supposedly if you commit a domestic violence crime, you're not allowed to have a gun, but there's not communication between the NCIS database and local police departments where these people, like domestic violence committers, are being arrested. They're not being put on the list. And I think that's where a lot of gun crime could be stopped. But the Democrats are just losing a lot of votes, especially here in Florida, by trying to be anti-gun.
Danielle in Sarasota, thanks for bringing up that issue. Let me remind folks that you are listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. Susan McManus, political science professor. Danielle brings up an incredibly important, potent issue for Florida politics, and that is the Second Amendment, the firearms.
Always a big issue, and it's really interesting if you think about the diversity of Florida. And if you mention, for example, guns, if you're in the panhandle, a lot of people there, guns means recreation, hunting. It means, you know, killing predators that are going to attack your crops or your whatever. It's different. But if you say guns in a big metropolitan area, it takes on a whole different meaning. So the gun issue is intertwined with the diversity of Florida. But you still have a lot of people that worry that even in metropolitan areas, about the ability of police to get to their homes fast enough if there's a problem. And you saw some of, every time you talk about constraining guns, more people go out and buy them for fear about not being able to get the help they need as fast as they need it when they're in that situation.
Fernand,
and
the
others see it as totally, you know, absolutely horrible, and it gets in the hands of people that are mentally disturbed or whatever, and you know, people kill each other unnecessarily. It's tied with mental health. It's just a very complex issue.
Yeah, we've seen some red flag laws be put into place here in Florida, for instance, kind of preemptive court measures to address the accessibility of firearms for folks that are deemed a danger to themselves or others. Fernand, Daniela puts voice saying flat out she's a Democrat. She leans liberal, but this gun issue when it comes to Democratic politics in Florida is a deciding factor for her.
Well look, I've known lots of Democratic elected officials in positions of responsibility at the local, statewide, and national level. I've still yet to meet one that is against the Second Amendment and that is anti-gun. So I think the trap that Democrats fall in is allowing, from a messaging perspective, to let the Republicans cast them as anti-guns. I don't know any Democrat that's anti-gun, but I do know Democrats and most Americans, according to the public opinion polls, feel that an AR-15 and these high-capacity magazine rounds that could fire off 1,000 rounds in less than a minute, many of them responsible for the type of carnage we've seen in the mass shootings, need to be better regulated. And I think that is what the issue is about. And even the caller, I'm not so sure that the Democrats should lead with this as a campaign message. This is better left dealt with once they win and are able to govern. But the truth of the matter is, I made the point originally about gun policy because it ties back to what we're seeing in this legislative session. If Governor DeSantis and the Republicans were acting in good faith when it came to protecting property and life, they would be tackling legislation to go to where the problems are, not inventing solutions to problems that don't exist, which is the recipe we see for this anti-rioting bill that tries to solve problems that we've seen over and over again did not exist, and where there are already existing laws in the book to punish those who break laws during peaceful protests.
Fernand Amandi has been one of our guests. He's with Ben Dixon and Amandi, a political polling agency in South Florida, Democratic strategist, MSNBC analyst, and yes, professor at the University of Miami. Forgot about that, Fernand. Professor Amandi, thank you very much for your time today.
been in our class before, Tom. How could you
I know. I should. Well, it was pre-pandemic. It was a blur's day for me. Susan McManus, and to be clear, I was speaking on the role of the media when it comes to elections. Susan McManus, University of South Florida, distinguished university professor emerita and political analyst. Professor McManus, always great to have you. Thanks for your time today, too.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks, folks.
And thanks to all of our callers as well. Florida Roundup is produced by WJCT Public Media in Jacksonville, WLRN Public Media in Miami. Andrea Perdomo and Heather Schatz are the producers. Jason Zapka, the director of radio programming in Miami. Our technical director, Peter Meritz. Engineering help from Doug Peterson, Charles Michaels, Josh Torres. Theme music, Miami jazz guitarist, Aaron Libos at AaronLibos.com. Have a great day.